When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Everybody, welcome back to this week's episode of the Elise Glink Show. I'm Elise Glink, and I'm here to help you make smart decisions about your financial life. But first, here's my Glinkonomics report for today. It has been a while. I can't even think about how long it's been since I've discussed Chinese real estate investments, but it continues to have a huge impact here in the U.S., somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 billion. In just residential property investment over the last year, according to Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate. Now, that doesn't even take into consideration the Chinese-American homebuyers in the market. Culturally, a huge percentage of these investors are attracted to homes sporting feng shui elements. So adding some feng shui elements may actually add value to your home, especially if you live in an area that's popular among Chinese or Chinese-American buyers. To help guide those decisions, Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, in partnership with the Asian Real Estate Association of America, surveyed 500 Chinese Americans about their feng shui preferences and practices. And here are a few of the findings. So 86% of those surveyed believe feng shui will play a role in future home buying decisions. 79% of those surveyed said they would pay more for a home that follows feng shui principles, and they say they'd pay an average of 16% more for a feng shui compliant house. I don't know if they think about it quite like that, but that's what they're saying. 75% of all Chinese Americans say that there is at least one feng shui deal breaker for them, like a house being located at the end of a dead-end street, having the stairs directly face the front door, having the front and back doors aligned, a house that faces north, just to name a few different things. Now, I'm adding a link to the study in the show notes for today because I want you to be able to check it out if you want to learn more about how feng shui principles could affect your home's value. Okay, on to the rest of the show. Today's episode is about how to pay for a remodeling project. So in the first segment, I'll cover the two most typical approaches to paying for a home remodeling project, using a home equity loan, and I'll get into which type of home equity loans tend to be best, or using money from your savings. Now, by home equity loan, I'm just going to say it's also home equity line of credit. So before you go, wait, she isn't going to talk about home equity lines of credit? I am. Sit tight. There is so much to understand about this, and there's no one-size-fits-all strategy. And the very best thing you can do is learn as much as you can about the options and then do some serious homework on your own individual financial picture to figure out which strategy will suit your needs best. And as Ben is the producer of the show, and I were talking about before we started to tape today, we were talking about how there are other definite other possibilities even beyond home equity loans and lines of credit for financing a home remodeling project. I mean, you may find that your local home improvement store is offering kind of an instant $10,000 or $15,000 loan or line of credit that will be tied to the purchases that you make. And you may find there that you've got interest-free for a year, after which you're going to come up with a whole balloon payment. If you're going to go that route, you're going to have to think about that in terms of where you're going to get the money for that balloon payment. So there's lots of strategy to think about. I think this segment will really help give a little clarity, at least to the beginning of the process. Then I'm going to answer a homeowner question that should give me a chance to get specific with my advice from the first segment. So this homeowner is getting set to start a remodeling project, and he's able to afford paying for it in cash. The question is whether that's a smart plan for his individual case, and I think you're going to be interested in hearing why I think he might be better off leveraging his home equity line of credit instead of using the cash in his pocket. And by the way, that is not always the case, and Ben pointed this out as well. Sometimes we see the reverse in our answers for our Real Estate Matters columns. Finally, to wrap up the show on paying for a remodeling project, I thought I'd offer up some great money-saving tips that should help keep any remodeling project from ballooning into a major expense. I mean, not to say it won't balloon into a major expense, but I've got five tips that should help. Now, of course, if you've got an endless supply of money available, feel free to ignore this advice and skip over this last segment. But since I don't feel like anybody just has an endless supply of money these days, and if you want to find a good balance between remodeling and saving money, I think these tips are going to give you some good ideas for how to make sure each dollar you spend goes as far as possible towards adding value to your home and adding value to your life. Well, that's the lineup for today's show. Let's get started. This week, I want to talk to you about remodeling projects, and in particular, how to pay for them. So, for most homeowners, it's a choice between paying cash or borrowing against the equity that they've built up in their home. Interest rates are still historically low. I don't know how long that's going to last, right? And home values are still rising, at least on average. So taking out a home equity line of credit, also known as a HELOC, or a home equity loan may seem like a sensible financial move. Not always the case. So let's start by going over the difference between a home equity loan and a HELOC, a home equity line of credit. Now, these two flavors of loans are similar, but they are not the same. A home equity loan is like a mortgage. It's issued specifically for a specific amount. You repay it over time in fixed monthly amounts, right? Like a regular mortgage. A line of credit, on the other hand, a HELOC, is something that you can use as needed up to your credit limit. So you might get a HELOC for $100,000, but you can have something that looks like a credit card and be able to charge it off at maybe $500 a piece. Or now you need to buy this, it's $3,000. Now, with a HELOC, you'll still make monthly payments, but you'll be able to make interest-only payments sometimes, depending on how it's actually structured, for a period of time. Now, understanding that difference should help when you're deciding how to fund your home remodeling project. But you'll also need to answer some other important questions before you proceed. First, how much other debt do you have? If you already owe a lot, and especially if your existing debt carries a high interest rate, you may want to reconsider taking on additional debt. Barring any immediate necessary repairs, many home renovations are elective, right? Let's just be honest there. You may want that beautiful bathroom, but you could wait to get it. So you want to get your financial house in order before you start any remodeling projects in your home. And then you're going to need to figure out how much equity you actually have. So if you don't have at least 20% equity, there are a few reasons that you may want to think twice against borrowing against it, right? First, you may still be paying private mortgage insurance or PMI. It would be a great idea to reach that 20% threshold and eliminate that payment before starting a remodeling project. Next, most lenders want you to have some stake in the home, some significant stake, and they're not going to let you borrow until you have at least 20% equity, although some lenders are getting a little bit looser about this number. And last, if home values drop, you will lose a significant amount of equity, right? So you don't want to borrow against your home so much that you're going to end up negative equity, and lenders don't want that to happen as well if home values fall through the floor again like they did in 2008, 9, and 10. So after you've looked at this debt and equity situation, you've got to pinpoint how much you're going to need to borrow to get the job done. Home equity loans have startup costs similar to getting a mortgage. There's an appraisal, an application fee, closing costs. You're going to want to ensure that the amount you're borrowing is worth the cost of borrowing it from the beginning. This is where it becomes critical to kind of suss out the potential for additional fees that would add to the cost of the loan and then avoid them if at all possible. Next, you've got to figure out how much of your cash you can deploy for the project. So let's say you've got a significant amount of equity in your home, but not a lot of cash in hand. Getting a HELOC or a home equity loan may not be a bad idea. Interest rates are low, and so for many, this may be one of the most cost-efficient ways to borrow money today. If you have a lot of cash, healthy emergency savings, and then beyond that, you may want to spend your cash, which is probably earning like far less than 1% in a bank account, instead of taking out a loan. That's because it's cheaper money. Next thing to consider is how long you actually plan to live in the remodeled house. So if you're planning on selling shortly after finishing the renovations, bear in mind that you generally have to pay back the loan in full when you sell. So you want to make sure that your remodeling project adds enough value to the home. So the sale is going to generate adequate cash to pay back the loan unless you have some other means of paying it off. But then we get back to that idea of having a stack of cash that you can use to pay for the renovation other than by borrowing. Now, let's say you're going to stay in the house for at least, I don't know, another 5, 7, or 10 years. Let's just call that the long term. You must be able to repay the loan using other means, right? It's not going to be that you're selling the house and the profits are going to pay it off. So HELOCs have what are known as draw periods, after which you can't take out any more money and must begin paying back the loan in earnest. So be aware of those deadlines and think about how long you're going to be there and what the strategic implications are. In the end, regardless of whether you use cash or a home equity loan or a line of credit, make sure that your enjoyment of the renovation process and the results make the entire investment worthwhile. It may seem counterintuitive, especially given my advice in the previous segment, but using a home equity loan instead of savings to pay for a remodeling project can be a good decision, even if you have some cash on hand. It all depends on your unique circumstances. Using a home equity loan instead of savings to pay for a remodeling project can be a very good decision, even if you have some cash on hand. It all really depends on your unique circumstances. I'm Elise Glink. Here's today's Real Estate Minute. Here's a question I got from a retiree looking to do some remodeling. He writes, I recently bought a little house I call my Medicaid home since the government will get it when I go to a nursing home. Should I keep borrowing the equity from my home and make upgrades that make the house more comfortable for me, or should I pay it off and use $10,000 of my own money for the upgrades? I'm getting ready to refinance the home at about 4.5%. Now, all things being equal, you're probably better off borrowing the money. Of course, if you can get a rate that's lower than 4.5%, that would be better. But even at that rate, you'll likely be better off borrowing than financing these projects out of your own pocket. If you use your savings instead, you might find yourself running short of cash for other expenses in the near future. And if you're on Medicaid, that tells me that things are tight anyway for you. And I'm going to want you to have a little extra cash on hand just because you're probably going to need it. Even if you have other investments, those investments are not equal to cash. You won't be penalized for withdrawing money from a retirement account at your age, but you still have to pay federal income taxes on the amount you take out. And that's why it's critical to budget conservatively and avoid taking big risks when you're retired. And it's just sort of a general overview. Borrowing at 4 or 4.5% should make this loan affordable enough to be sensible, and you should be able to benefit from the mortgage interest rate deduction in the future, depending on how much income you actually have. But even without that deduction, in your case, I still think it's wise for you to keep a healthy amount of cash in case of a rainy day. So just to recap, what I'm telling you to do is finance the purchase, don't use your cash to pay for it. You can save on almost any home remodeling project by planning before paying, buying materials creatively, and getting your hands a little dirty. I'm Elise Glink. Here's today's Real Estate Minute. If you're trudging forward with some remodels for the fall when, let's say, the kids are back in school, you might want to think about these 5 ways to save money on a home remodeling project. Number one on my list, build in a 20% cushion. Now, this isn't necessarily a cost-saving tip, but a budget and sanity savings tip to start you in the right direction. Almost every renovation goes over budget for one reason or another, and so it is so better to be prepared than surprised, even if that may mean your finishes aren't as fancy or you sacrifice some space. Second on my list, employ more efficient modern design. Instead of blowing out walls and expanding the space, focus on design that would make the space function more efficiently. By sticking with the original bones and not moving around the plumbing or electrical outlets, you can save thousands of dollars and really speed up that renovation project. Number three, there are plenty of ways to get recycled materials, and you should find some of them. Habitat for Humanity operates about 400 restores around the country, which offer bargain prices on materials salvaged from home remodels. Restore staff can even take a look at your materials before your demolition, so you can take a charitable tax credit by donating them. So that's on that side. You can also check out building supply auctions. There are all kinds of other stores that do something similar to what Restore does. all over the country. So especially in places where you have kind of an older housing supply. And you can also ask your contractor for leftover materials. But do your homework ahead of time if you want to use rehabbed materials, because not all contractors will work with them. And sometimes when you use those kinds of materials, and I'm not talking about a fireplace surround, which is kind of its own unique thing that you kind of stick on the wall, but if you've got some of the other things, you're thinking about rehabbed molding or doors or things, working with those might require more work, more time, more money than if you just built it new. Number four, get specific about products. You got to give yourself enough time to figure out what the look is going to be, right? And then figure out a way to do it for less. Choosing everything from appliances to light fixtures will also allow your contractor to develop a more specific budget with fewer surprises. And honestly, change orders are always the very biggest thing. So the more definitive you are at the beginning, the better it's going to be down the line. Number five, help out or, conversely, get help. So there are actually contractors who offer consulting or let you work alongside to reduce your costs. They're rare, but they're out there. So ask your contractor if he or she offers anything like that kind of a program. And you can also do your demo as long as you're not knocking down weight-bearing walls. Hello, think along the lines of ripping out cabinets, not actually tearing down walls that may have all kinds of stuff in them. Or find ways to pick up and transport materials or garbage. You really can save big, seriously. Even if it means doing a little investing in a utility trailer, renting a truck by the hour from a big box home store, there are so many ways that you can help save money. Above all, you've got to have a firm vision and a good general understanding of how each step will get done in the process, and then look for any cost-saving alternatives. And that will lead you down the remodeling path with a few extra bucks in your pocket and hopefully a few extra months saved. I hope you enjoyed today's episode on how to pay for a remodeling project. So as always, if there was anything you missed, do not worry. First, you can listen to the whole thing all over again, but you can always find the show notes to this episode at thinklink.com. My website is spelled thinklink.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes if you haven't already, and please consider giving the show a rating or a review when you're there. You can do so by searching for The Elise Glink Show in the podcast section of iTunes. And really, this will help get the show discovered by lots of people. And you can forward the links to them, too. You can also check out my other podcast, Monday Morning Marketing with Elise Glink and John Byrne, for some extra marketing, PR, and social media advice. This is terrific for anybody who owns a small business or is deciding to jump into social media. Would love to be able to give you the benefit of our wisdom earned, I must say, from our years of working in the business. You can also find it on iTunes or in the blog section of my digital content agency website, thinkglinkmedia.com. This brings us to the end of another episode of The Elise Glink Show. I'm still your host, Elise Glink, and I'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.